It is Lord Balaram's appearance. We are in the Krishna Balaram temple. And in Raman Reiki, where Krishna and Balaram used to frolic in the dust and enjoy pastimes. One thought that came to mind, which relates to both Lord Balaram and Srila Prabhupada, took place at the Ardha Kumbha Mela in 1971. At the time, two of Srila Prabhupada's disciples were having a discussion about Balaram Temple. And one of them, Madhudvisa Prabhu, said that there is no difference between Krishna and Balaram, except that Krishna is black and Balaram is white. And if you have read Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will find a verse to the same effect, that Krishna and Balaram are the same, except in color. However, Srila Prabhupada's disciple Yamuna Devi said that there is a difference. There's another difference, which is that Krishna is the only enjoyer of Radharani. So the two of them were butting heads on this point. Madhudvisa Prabhu insisted that there's no difference. The only difference is that Krishna is black and Balaram is white. And Yamuna Devi insisted there is another difference, which is that Krishna is the only enjoyer of Radharani. So, in the midst of this disputatious argument, His Holiness Kamal Krishna Goswami approached Srila Prabhupada and told him about what the two devotees were saying. He said that, one said that there's no difference between Krishna and Balaram, the only difference is the color. Madhudvisa Prabhu had said that. And Srila Prabhupada replied, he is right. Then Tumal Krishna Goswami said, but Yamuna Devi said there is another difference, which is that Krishna is the only enjoyer of Srimati Radharani. And Srila Prabhupada said, she is right. And then Tamal Krishna Goswami said, but they're both saying different things. They can't both be right. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, you are right. And then Tamal Krishna Goswami said, well then, who is right? And Srila Prabhupada replied, you decide. So in this brief and somewhat humorous exchange, there are some deep lessons. Everything that Srila Prabhupada said and did is full of significant meaning. One lesson is that we are dealing with transcendental subjects which are inconceivable. Inconceivable means they are beyond mundane logic and reason. And in fact, one of Krishna's qualities is that he reconciles apparent contradictions. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote a piece in which he enumerates so many contradictions that are reconciled in Krishna. And another lesson is that the same absolute truth can be seen by different devotees from different angles of vision. And although what one sees appears to contradict what another sees, both may be true. There's a poem that I learned as a schoolboy. I had an uncle who used to give me nice books as presents for my birthday or other occasions. And one book had a poem by John Saxon, a British author. And I liked it so much, I would recite it all the time. And it relates to India. And it's probably 8 years old, 10 years old. I don't know if I could remember the whole poem, because it's been more than 50 years. But I'll see what I can do. It was six men of Hindustan, to learning were inclined, who went to see the elephant, though all of them were blind, and might by observation satisfy his mind. And then the poem goes on to discuss how each of the blind men approaches the elephant, and one comes up to the elephant's side and says, it's all a nice verse, "Behold, the mighty elephant is like a wall." And then another one, groping around, catches hold of the tail and says, "Behold, the mighty elephant is like a rope." And then another one catches the trunk and says, "Oh, the mighty elephant is like a hose." And another one catches the leg. "Behold, the mighty elephant is like the trunk of a tree." And another one catches the elephant's ear and says, "Oh, the mighty elephant is just like a fan." And then the poem goes on to describe how these six men went on arguing throughout the night, each one convinced that his experience of the elephant or perception of the elephant was correct and the others were wrong. And then at the end of the poem, the author says, therefore, we should not speculate about the absolute truth or God, because no one knows what it is. So the conclusion, of course, is half true. We should not speculate about the nature of the absolute truth, because we cannot understand the absolute truth by speculation. But the idea that we should set aside the subject and deal with more practical matters is not true, because we can learn of the nature of the absolute truth by hearing from the absolute truth himself, from Krishna. That's the Bhagavad Gita. The absolute truth is telling us about himself. Or we can learn about the absolute truth from those who have seen the truth, Tattvadarshi, Sarvidi Pranipatena Parikrashina Sevaya Upadeshyan Chintyana Yanas Tattvadarshina. Those who have seen the truth or understood the truth, they can impart the truth to you. So this is the process, descending process. And here too, there are two examples of the monkey and the kitten. The example of the monkey is that the baby monkey will catch hold of the mother monkey, from behind, hold on around the neck, and the mother monkey is jumping from tree to tree, and the baby monkey is holding on for dear life, in a very precarious position. Once I went to the Johannesburg Zoo for my health. Devotees were taking me different places to walk. After seeing all the parks in Johannesburg, they thought to take me to the zoo. So, all right. And it was a big zoo. And I saw this example, because the baby monkeys, they're like really small. They're really small. And they can barely hold on to the mother. And I saw that way up high in the tree, the mother is bounding around from one tree to another. Baby is really just holding on for dear life. And the other example is of the cat and the kitten, that the mother cat catches the baby kitten with her teeth and holds the kitten behind the neck and carries the kitten wherever she wants to go. So Srila Prabhupada said that in other processes, the practitioners are more like the baby monkeys. They're trying to move by their own strength, but they're always in a very precarious condition, and at any moment they can fall. Whereas devotees, they are more like the kid who just surrenders to Krishna, mother cat, and just depends on the mother cat and gets carried where the mother cat wants. But although we do, or Srila Prabhupada in particular did emphasize that we're like the kittens who are picked up by Krishna, it does not mean that we do not make our own effort. We also make our own effort. And therefore, both examples have some application. We also make our efforts like the baby monkey, but ultimately we depend on the Lord. Like in 1977, when Srila Prabhupada was passing his last days, just in the next room, the latest volume of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Volume 2, arrived. And the devotees offered it to Srila Prabhupada, and he was very pleased. But just not pleased that they published the book, but he was very filled with love for Krishna. I mean, we could see him looking at the pictures, just like so filled with love for Krishna and Mother Yasoda and all of Krishna's associates. So before Srila Prabhupada left, there had been a controversy amongst his disciples. Srila Prabhupada had said that he wanted to be taken on bullock cart to go over down the hill to go on parikrama. But Srila Prabhupada's health was so delicate that many of the disciples were convinced that he would be, jostled on the way and subjected to a lot of pain, and that he could even leave his body. Whereas other disciples contended that he has given us an instruction. It's not our duty to consider the merits of the instruction. It is our duty simply to execute the instruction. So there was quite a difference of opinion between the two groups. And, given that it was Srila Prabhupada and our relationship with him, the feelings were running very strong. Now, without discussing the past time in detail, I will go ahead to perhaps 2 or 3 days after Srila Prabhupada left this world. Because there were senior devotees on both sides whom I respected and admired, and I wasn't really clear what was the actual position in the controversy. So I was chanting in Srila Prabhupada's room by his bed, and then I had the idea to go behind his bed, near where his books were kept. And I was chanting there, looking at the pictures on the wall. And then my attention went to the new volume of Srimad Bhagavatam that had arrived. So I picked it up and opened the book, and it came right to the pastime of Mother Yasoda binding Lord Krishna with ropes. And within a few verses, I read one shloka that, although Krishna is the absolute truth and cannot be bound by anyone, he allowed himself to be bound by the ropes of Mother Yashoda. But he was not exactly bound by the ropes, but he was bound by her love. And reading the verses in that context, I came to the conclusion that when Srila Prabhupada acceded to his disciples' request not to go on curriculum, it was not exactly that they were forcing him, certainly not, because Srila Prabhupada was independent. He was not to be forced by some disciples. But he allowed himself to be bound by their love. And in this discussion of binding Krishna, what are the conditions under which Krishna is bound? There are two factors. One is parishram, hard labor. Mother Yashoda labored very hard to catch Krishna, and then after catching him, she labored very hard to bind him. She began by putting a normal length of rope around his waist, but it was 2 inches too short, or 2 fingers too short. So she got a little more rope and added it to the original rope, and it was still 2 inches too short. And she was surprised because every morning she would dress Krishna and put a belt around him of a certain length, and she never had any trouble tying the belt around his waist. So then she added more. I'm sure you know the story. Added more. They were a cowherd community. They had lots of ropes for tying the animals. So she used up all of her ropes. The neighbors brought their ropes. She used up all of their ropes. Practically all the ropes that were available in Raj, she tied together. It must have been miles and miles of ropes. And she still couldn't find Krishna. The rope was always 2 fingers too short. So then Krishna, seeing her hard labor and intense desire, perspiration, was moved. Not only did she labor hard physically, but she labored against all the advice of her friends and neighbors, because eventually they told her, you're not going to be able to bind him. you should give up this effort. You know, it's obvious you're not going to be able to bind him. So he doesn't need it. So, in spite of all of their good advice to the contrary, she continued with her labors. And in the end, Krishna felt compassion for her and allowed her to bind him. So our acharyas say that this is how to bind Krishna. It is a combination between our hard labor and Krishna's mercy. And in that way, the example apparently differing examples of the monkey and the cat are reconciled or combined. But ultimately, it is mercy. No matter what efforts we make, we cannot capture Krishna except by his mercy. And that is the descending process. That's the descending process. And we just give ourselves to Krishna, to the service of Krishna, and depend on him. Pure devotees don't even worry about their destinations or their advancement. They just worry about serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. They depend on him. And Krishna never disappoints them. But sometimes we do face difficulties and experience pain. When we were undergoing the struggle at Juhu to get the land, I was suffering a lot, really suffering. And I was just waiting for Srila Prabhupada to come. And with that, when Srila Prabhupada comes, I will feel pacified. Just his presence will make me feel pacified. So Srila Prabhupada came, but I didn't feel pacified. I was as disturbed as before. So I consulted Tamal Krishna Goswami. And he gave a very apt answer. And I was surprised because I knew I was doing exactly what Srila Prabhupada wanted me to do. Because he told me what he wanted me to do, and I was doing it. So I asked Tamal Krishna Goswami that I'm doing what Prabhupada wants me to do, and I know I'm doing what he wants me to do, because he's told me so, but still I'm suffering so much. How is that? So then he gave the example that you're in a room, and the room catches fire. And the only way out of the room is to break the window. And so the only way you can break the window is if you force your hand through the glass. When you force your hand through the glass, it's going to get cut and you'll feel pain. But still, the hand is doing what the body wants it to do, what it has to do for the sake of the body, for the sake of the whole. But it still feels pain. So, you know, we're part and parcel of Krishna, yet we serve the Supreme Whole. And in our case, being followers of Srila Prabhupada, he's the representative of Krishna. But even then, we can feel pain in the course of our service, even if the service is exactly what it's supposed to be. And sometimes the inner pleasure we experience when we're in difficult circumstances externally is greater than the inner pleasure we experience when we're in a more comfortable situation. Two examples come to mind. One, I was in some Indian town where I was traveling earlier, before we got to them. And I had to send Srila Prabhupada a telegram late at night. And so I went to the telegraph office. It was really hot. It was packed with people. And it was full of flies. And I don't know how it works now, but there were tables at the back where there were the forms that you filled in. And there's like a mass of people grabbing for forms and fighting for space and pens to write their messages. So somehow to get through that obstacle. And then when I finally got there, there was only one kind of form that I saw. So I took the form, filled in the message, and stood in the queue for a long time. And finally my turn came. I presented the telegram to the postal worker. I said, "Wrong form. Go back again. Get the right form." He said, "Well, you know, the information is there. All the information is there. I mean, it might be a different form, but the information is going to be the same." Wrong form. Wrong form. But somehow, in the midst, and this went on until very late, but in the midst of it all, I felt bliss. Because the only reason I was there was for Srila Prabhupada's service. There's no other reason on earth why I would be in that telegraph office other than Prabhupada's service. And I felt ecstasy. Another instance was in Calcutta. It was the rainy season. And I had gone very far north in Calcutta, maybe even beyond the city limits. And, you know, I had to get back. And usually we would take a bus or a rickshaw. But it was pouring so heavily. And at least at the time, there wasn't much of a sewage system. So the water was just rising. And I remember it was getting higher and higher, and I was walking. You know, first I tried to lift up my dhoti a little, and like it was ankle deep, then calf deep, then almost knee deep. I was like wading in water. And there were no cars on the road, no buses. So I was just walking, wading through the water. Then I finally found a rickshaw, and the rickshaw driver was sort of taking rest in the rickshaw. It's not a motor rickshaw, this guy. And so I roused him and said, you know, can we take it? Didn't want to be bothered. Would rather sleep it off. Just rather sleep it off and wait till the rain stops.
Kind of like that, you know.
Once in a while a taxi would come by, but try to flag it down. They'd all be cool. And then, too, I was thinking, the only reason I'm doing this is for Srila Prabhupada's service. There's no other reason why I would be wading through the streets, not, you know, of Calcutta. So this is the difference between internal happiness that comes from serving the spiritual master and external happiness that comes from a comfortable situation that's pleasing to one's senses. And when one serves the spiritual master in a situation that's pleasing to one's senses at the same time, there could always be some question. To what extent am I doing this to please the spiritual master? But to what extent am I doing it because it's pleasing to my senses? But when you're in a situation that's not pleasing to your senses, but you're in the situation for the service of the spiritual master, and you really are serving the spiritual master as he desires, not that you're speculating what he wants or what you should be doing, or it's not like you're doing like some artificial austerities just for the sake of doing austerities, that it's incidental to the service. And then you relish that happiness within, which is far greater than any material happiness. As far as Govardhana Parikrama, I'm thinking of the last Govardhana Parikrama I did in 1999. His Holiness Srinivas Swami and I decided to do Govardhana Parikrama together. And at the time, I had a heart disease called angina. And he had a liver disease, hepatitis C. But still, you know, we were happy and we were ready to do Parikrama. So we began at near Haridev in the town of Govardhana, Manasikanga. And we kept going, came to Radhakrishna, and His Holiness Indradubhya Swami and His Holiness Vanagar Swami were there. And of course, Mohan Panda was there. Anyway, so we kept going. And especially after Radhakrishna, it became very difficult. Like, we started early, but by then it was like really hot. But we finished it. Then a few days later, he went to Bombay, I went to Santa Barbara. And he ended up in the Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Tacoma. And I ended up in Cottage Hospital in Santa Barbara getting cardiac bypass surgery. So later, when we discussed our parikrama, Maharaj said, I didn't really want to do it, do the whole parikrama, but you seemed like you wanted to, so I forced myself for your sake. And I said, I didn't want to do the parikrama. I thought you wanted to finish it, so I forced myself for your sake. But it was a memorable parikrama, which had far-reaching effects. I guess when you, it's sort of a combination of friendship and reverence that we have with very close God brothers. Like, we're friends, so as a friend, I wanted to please my God brother, Shiva, and he wanted to please me. But there's another dimension to our friendship in Krishna consciousness, which is that we're all connected with Krishna. So, someone might be a friend, but if he says something, it's not just that a friend is speaking, but it could be that Krishna is speaking through him. And Krishna is manifesting his will. So, but Sridhar Swami was, yes, please come forward, Nehru. Now, eventually, Sridhar Swami got out of the hospital, and he decided that he was going to come to America and visit me in Santa Barbara. So, again, without going into all the details, he came, and a little while later, there were some, I guess, factors that contributed, but a little while later he was in coma again. So he took him to the hospital. And, you know, he was coming out of the coma gradually. It had to do with the brain becoming filled with toxins because his liver wasn't functioning. There's a technical term for it. And as he was coming out of his comatose condition, he wasn't really conscious. He wasn't like fully conscious of, you know, where he was, who was present, what he was saying. But his inner good nature came up. It's sort of like the time of death. You know, at the time of death, you can't necessarily control your mind or your senses. It really depends on what's deepest in your heart. And in Sridhar Swami's case, his Krishna consciousness and his good humor and his care for others came out. And then later, as he became more aware of his situation, he felt very embarrassed by the way he was acting earlier. But from our point of view, the way he was acting earlier was wonderful. He just wasn't controlling himself the way we do in social situations. Anyway, then he got out of the hospital, came back to our place, and then we got a bill from the hospital, $30,000. So, Maharaj's brother Mo had come down from Vancouver to be with him. So I didn't really want to discuss it with Maharaj, but I was discussing with Mo. We've got this bill, it's like $35,000. And Sridharaswami overheard us, and he said, "What is it?" So we told him. He said, "Tell them they can have my consciousness back. I want my money. They can keep my consciousness. I'm keeping money." But anyway, we sorted it out. We made some application. We explained it was a mendicant monk. So many wonderful devotees. And we were sitting amongst so many wonderful devotees right now. It's, maybe it's natural, but in a way it's a shame that we often appreciate them fully only after they've gone. And then we think, "Oh, I wish I had appreciated him more before him or her. I wish I had taken more of his association before." But even then, there's hope, because we can always associate by vajra, by following the instructions, by hearing person's thoughts and kirtans, and by, you know, following their instructions, trying to fulfill their desires. But it should be a lesson that we should we should be conscious that we're dealing with devotees who are exalted souls. And we should also know that they won't always be here as we know them. There was one lady, I told a little about her on Saturday on Mary. But this was when Prabhupada first began the movement in the United States, say 1970. Just got the temple in Los Angeles. And this young Gujarati girl, which is, probably 18, 17, 18, 19. She had recently gotten married in India, and her husband came to America. And there weren't so many Indians in America then. And somehow she founded the ISKCON temple. And Srila Prabhupada was spending a lot of time there then. And she became like very close to him, like a father and daughter, grandfather and granddaughter. And she would, she would cook for him, and he would come into the kitchen and check on how she was doing, and they would have like very free talks. So on one occasion, she said, Prabhupada, I've come to America, I want to see a department store. In those days, there were no department stores in America. You know what a department store is? It's a big store that has a lot of departments. It's not like, it's not like a hardware store or a clothing store or a, it has, a hardware department, a clothing department, a bedding department, a kitchen, So she said, Prabhupada, I want to see a department store. And Prabhupada said, no. No, I just want to go once. I just want to see what it is. And Prabhupada said, no, don't go. And she said, why not? He said, because when you go to the department store, you'll see so many things that you want. Before you go to the store, you don't even know they exist. And you have no desire for them. But when you go to the store, you'll see so many things that you'll want. And you will develop an attachment for those things. And as long as you have any material attachment, you have to take birth again. But, she's a young girl, and so she's like arguing. And then Srila Prabhupada said, it was all very good natured, like said grandfather and granddaughter. But then Prabhupada said, you're arguing with me now. But one day, I won't be here. And then you'll think back how you were arguing with me. And you'll feel sorry. That was a very striking statement that she made. The idea is that we may take each other for granted and whatever, argue, quarrel. Not that there's anything wrong with that, necessarily. We think, how am I going to look at this quarrel, after the person is gone? If one day this person hasn't beaten, how am I going to feel that I have this quarrel with this devotee? Tentatively end with one more little point. You might have heard of the Kirtan Meter Madhava from Mauritius. It was part of Iyengar Prabhu's 24-hour kirtan group. A Madhava can lead kirtan for hours. It's the same melody, very slow, eyes closed, singing very soulfully. So once, His Holiness Bhakti Brinda Brinda Swami asked him, Madhava, you just close your eyes and sing the same tune for hours. What are you thinking when your eyes are closed and you're sitting? He said, I'm thinking that each mantra I'm singing could be my last. I mean, can you imagine that if you're on the verge of death and you get to chant one last mantra, what you would put into that mantra? You put everything into it. So, to be conscious of death, Srila Prabhupada writes in the Purusha book, to always be conscious of death. To be conscious of death is very good for spiritual progress, because we don't put false hopes in the body and in perishable material things. But we're clear on who we really are and what's really left when the body goes. And what's left is basically just us and the holy name and the Vaishnavas. Jamal Krishna Goswami's brother Carl told me that in his family they have a policy that whenever anyone in the family leaves the house, they say to the others, I love you. And then the others say, I love you. Because when they leave the house, you can never know for sure whether they'll come back. And if they don't come back, you want your last memory of them to be very sweet. You know, this way your last memory is, I love you, I love you. Not the quarrel, storm out of the house, slam the door. So, Kishori saved my life, so that's why I feel I belong to them, and whatever they want to do with my body, they can do. Because that last time when I was in India, I mean, not the last time I was in India, but 1999 when I was in India, I was suffering this chest pain. Angina. But because of the treatment I was following in America, the way of life I was following in America, it practically disappeared. I actually forgot I had it, but then when I came back to India, it came back. But I was I didn't want to recognize it in its full significance. I was thinking, oh, well, anyway, it wasn't there in America, now it's gone. And when I go back, it will go away. So Sri Dhamman Kishori came to visit me in my office, and I was really suffering, but I was in that mood of just forcing myself to stay and fulfill the expectations that other devotees had of me. And they both said that, you know, you're dealing with the heart, and the heart is very critical organ. I think Kishori said that same day, a man had phoned the hospital, Dr. Vedanta Hospital, gotten her on the phone. And he was having some chest pain. He wasn't sure whether he should come into the hospital or not. But he was thinking, maybe he doesn't really have to come. And she said, when you're dealing with the heart, it's a very critical organ. You must come immediately. So based on her instructions, he got in a taxi and headed for the hospital, and on the way, he had a heart attack. But because he was on his way to the hospital, they were able to deal with him and save his life. So they both said, you know, you just can't keep forcing yourself like this. You have to do what you have to do for your health. And then I, you know, cut back a little, which I don't even know what would have happened if I didn't. And I went to see Sridhar Swami. I was in my office, and he was in room 102, just down the hallway. we're like sticking it out together. And he said, don't worry, you go, you know, write your books. The pen is mightier than the sword. So, yes, I really feel I owe my life to them. So whatever they ask me to do, I do, because they saved my life. Yes.
Thank you very much. My segment was that I read that one Prabhupada said, you were directly praying to Siddhanta Rasa. One of the Prabhupada was very heavy on me. You were chastising why you should approaching my demand greatly. You should approach my demand through me. How do you understand this? If you have thought of Prabhupada.
He said that he read that one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples was praying to a picture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And Srila Prabhupada chastised him with, why are you praying to my Guru Maharaj directly? I can approach you through my Guru Maharaj through me. Srila Prabhupada knew the hearts of his disciples, knew the mentalities of his disciples, and he said it was a true principle, but at the same time it was what that particular disciple needed to hear at that particular time. accommodated. But in the case of approaching Srila Prabhupada, the Pandaracharya of his kind, it's a different situation because he's the Pandaracharya of his kind. And everyone in his kind does have a direct relationship with them, personal relationship. So you don't jump over your spiritual master, but at the same time you do have a direct relation. You have a direct approach to Srila Prabhupada. So that would not apply. I mean, I could not imagine any god brother of mine telling a disciple you can't pray to Srila Prabhupada, right? It's a different situation.
And you may have to leave for 10 minutes. It's really sorry.
You may have to leave. Don't speak leave, L-E-A-V-E. Speak live. As Srila Prabhupada said to Bob Cohen one day. But Bob Cohen was weak. For him being with Prabhupada now, living. But in your case, you are living eternally. So, and we will live with you.
Hare
Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. On behalf of all the devotees, we are extremely grateful for this very, very special association.
I'm grateful to you. You gave me a chance to open my heart to you.
In fact, the time we started the yatra, I was looking forward when it will end, because I knew at the end it is your association.
We all were very excited. Siddhanta, before we started the yatra, we were going to meet Jyotish Maharaj and Vrindavan on Balaram Jayanti. You are looking forward to this wonderful association.
You are very kind. Alright?
Thank you, Maharaj. And we pray that you have many, many years with us. Healthy, wonderful years. We come again to Bombay. Hopefully every year.
Yeah, I've had some deep thoughts on that topic. Yeah. I'm thinking that may happen.
Maharaj, because the devotees in Bombay, the last lecture you gave at Radha Gopinath Temple, it was the most mesmerizing lecture we ever heard. I repeated the lecture in the train to many devotees who were not there. And the more I speak about it, the more it was so relishable.
Yeah. I also felt they could have just kept speaking and they could have kept listening. So I think that's what I should be doing for a lot of my time. Alright, well, I'll chant and pray and wish you all the best on your return journey. Shri Prabhupada
Jai.
His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj
Jai. Jai 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 Jai